It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And Joe Pakovitz, comic book historian, is with us.
Hello, hello.
And, theme song's just running kind of long.
Is it?
Yeah.
I guess so. It's good. It's good.
You know, we didn't fade it out enough.
Sorry. I can see it. It's coming to the end here.
Yep. It is. Well, we can watch it on GarageBand slowly dying. There it goes. Hey, everybody. So, interestingly enough, we were going to skip the show this week because of other commitments, and those commitments fell through, and then we're like, do we have a topic? And then the big geek thing of the month happened, which is the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer is now out online. It premiered on Jimmy Kimmel,
yeah.
And now it's on YouTube.
On like Monday night or something, right? Tuesday night, maybe?
Yeah, So it is now out. Pretty much everyone has seen it. If you haven't seen it, it's on the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, you're like one of the one people on the planet.
Yeah, you and the other guy.
Yeah. But you never know. You know,
I
went to the movies last night, and they showed the trailer for Days of Future Past. My wife had never seen it.
Yeah, but I don't think that was as big a... Because they've made X-Men movies before. I think, like, you know, it looks... It's a great trailer for that Days of Future Past, but it looks like every other X-Men movie they've made. A lot of things flashing on the screen, 100 different mutants that, you know, you have to try to pick out. I think the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer is a little different because it is so different than... having never really read those comics, other than the new series that Bendis is writing, I had no idea what to expect. I was pretty much expecting just Avengers in space. And then you watch the trailer... And it starts off, you know, it's got the eerie music, this dark chamber, the Star-Lord guy's going to grab what's probably going to be like an Infinity Stone, all these guards come at him with guns, and then they're just like, who are you? And you expect this like big, like, oh shit moment, and then he's just like, Star-Lord, and which is great, and then the other guy's just like, who? And it's like, and then it just breaks into like, oh, this is going to be the hangover in space, like, it's going to be a total... It's like a comedy movie almost. It probably won't be labeled as a comedy, but it's going to be so kind of silly,
well,
which
it's,
is fun.
It's you know, we keep talking about how the different books have their literary or movie genre. Well, taking a look at this one, this is the swashbuckling adventure. This is the Errol Flynn movie it's Errol Flynn in space as a pirate. He's you know. He and his merry band of misfit toys is going around the galaxy, righting wrongs with style panache and no small dollop of humor.
Yeah. Like, it's awesome, even though the way they're just like, who are these guys? And it's like, they call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy. And
who else calls them that? Them, mostly.
Yeah, mostly them. And then he's just like, what an asshole. Like, they're just all a bunch of jerks, you know, but it's like...
Well, and they look like a bunch of bums in that shot, like Star-Lord's yawning.
Yeah.
They're all, like, scratching themselves.
Rocket is spitting on the floor.
Yeah, I had no interest in this movie at all. I never read Guardians of the Galaxy. I didn't care about Guardians of the Galaxy. And I thought this was kind of a crazy thing to do. I was like, well, are you doing this really cheap? But then you see they're spending as much money as they're spending at least Iron Man money, if not Avengers money.
Yeah, if you look at it, like you said, all the effects, there's like space battles, it's like ships flying, and it's like, I don't even know what to like kind of equate it to, but the budget certainly has got to be huge on this movie for a bunch of characters no one's really ever heard of.
But it does have that Avengers tie-in, though, larger story arc, Avengers story arc tie-in, which is really intriguing. What just leaped out at me from the trailer was you've got the Collector. And last scene, the Collector was getting an Infinity Gem from Sif.
Yeah, in Thor Dark World, which...
was that post-credit scene, right?
Yeah, the disc comes out this week, so that's as much spoiler warning as you're getting.
Yeah.
Is the post-credit sequence has Benicio Del Toro as the Collector, which surprised me initially that it wasn't a tease for Captain America, which is still an Avengers movie, and comes out first.
Yeah.
That's how much they're pushing this movie.
And I bet
is there kind of
more...
just
in Cap that leads up to it. But speaking on the Collector, can anyone else tell me why he looks like Jim Steranko? Like, he's got like the crazy like bleached
hair,
blonde, like white hair,
pompadour.
It's like I just want to like put red shades on him. Just like let him be. Like, I'm actually really super disappointed that
it's not actually Jim Steranko playing him.
The Collector. But maybe it's Benicio del Toro playing Jim Steranko playing the Collector, and I think that would be magical.
That would be awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. No,
I don't. I don't think I've had enough black coffee to understand what you just said. All I know is that Jim Steranko is spending all of his time criticizing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, that's fine. Good for him.
He goes on Twitter, and every week he's like, yeah, not good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's been reviewing, crazy. And then I think some website is having him review them. They're like, well, if you're just going to do this all the time, just do it for us.
Yeah.
But I was, this trailer made me want to see the movie, which is what every trailer is supposed to do and usually doesn't. Basically, every trailer that comes out now is, hey, I've been hearing about this movie for a year. Now I get to see some of it. Or, what the hell is this thing? I'm not going to see that.
Right.
Yeah. It's rare that you see a trailer and you go, what's this? Hey, I think I want to see that movie. And that's exactly what happened was I kind of went along with every bit of it. And I was like, I'm not a huge Chris Pratt fan. I'm not a huge Parks and Rec fan.
Right.
If Nick Offerman wasn't on there, I probably wouldn't watch it at all. But so like he didn't intrigue me. But then I, in the first couple 30 seconds, I was already on board with what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I liked it enough where I went and downloaded the first 6 issues of Guardians of the Galaxy of the 2008 series.
Run, right?
Yeah, well, that's what they're basing this movie off of. The run now in that started in 2013 is to line up with that.
Right, the Bendis run.
Yeah, the way Bendis did Avengers Assemble before Avengers came out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I want to see where it comes from, not what it's going to mirror.
Right, because you've already seen hints. The thing I liked about this one is most trailers, you're like, okay, now I've seen the four best scenes in the upcoming movie.
Yeah.
Done. But this one, they were smart. They just hinted at a few things. You only saw a split second of Karen Gillan's Nebula. You only saw a split second of the Collector.
Yeah, you barely can see Ronan.
Right.
We had to pause the trailer to find Ronan.
Yeah, they don't give away too much in this one, which is really intriguing.
Yeah, you don't even hear Rocket Raccoon or Groot speak in the trailer.
No.
Yeah. You know,
no, they did put out a series of 5 30-second spots, one for each character, and there they actually show him speak.
Yeah, I saw that.
And they interview Bradley Cooper. But that's the interesting thing. I also thought it was a big risk. Not just let's make a book nobody's heard of and give it the full Marvel Studios treatment, but let's also start to tap into the cosmic Marvel.
Yeah.
Which I know, Joe, you're a big fan of.
Oh, yeah. Done
right.
And
I was never a big fan of it. I always liked Fantastic Four because it had one foot in the cosmic, one foot very grounded. And the Fantastic Four's movies that have been made and looks like the one that's going to be made are completely grounded.
Right.
Looks like they'll just fight Doctor Doom again. Like, you're not going to see this Fantastic Four going to space, going to the negative zone, and have these kind of cosmic adventures.
Well, I think that they figured out, at least Marvel has figured out, and DC and Fox haven't, they figured out what works, you know, that something that works on the page doesn't necessarily work on the screen. And I think that they figured out what does and what doesn't. And that's
tights
what's driving
usually
a lot
don't
of this
work
stuff.
Number one,
right?
Yeah, and I think that's true, and it's not true because if you had told me 5 years ago, like Marvel is going to make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, and I'd be like, no fucking way. Like, it's a talking raccoon who hangs out with like a tree monster, and they are. It's like, and they're taking it seriously in the sense where it's like they're just trying to do it with a big budget and do it right, and then like every other studio with like the X-Men, it's like taking them 10 years to figure out what the hell they're doing.
Right,
or with,
right.
You know, the Superman stuff, it's like, you know, without making like two Batman, it's like, we're going to get the raccoon on screen before Wonder Woman.
Yeah, well, yeah. Brett White had a great tweet about that exactly. He's a writer for Comic Book Resources. And he tweeted, DC be all, we don't know how to make a Wonder Woman movie work, and Marvel be all, he's a raccoon with a machine gun.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's like,
did you guys see the poster they released for this movie?
Yes.
Yes.
Where it's like, from the studio that brought you like the Avengers and Thor and whatever, Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's almost standing there in front of the ship. And then the tagline is, you're welcome.
Yep.
Which is like a dick slap in the face. Oh, it's DC. Total go fuck yourself.
Well, it's a total douche move, but it seems like it fits the tone of the movie.
It's perfect.
And that's the thing I like most about the trailer was that it looks like they're all really having fun.
Oh, yeah.
And it was interesting because last night when I went to the movies, I went to see the new RoboCop, which I know you guys haven't seen. And that's a movie that's not having any fun at all.
Yeah, you said it was like too serious or something, right?
And you know, and if you go back to that early 80s movie originally, like just when I was in high school and saw it, it kind of threw me back because it's so ultra violent and over the top, and people are screaming and, you know, doing cocaine.
Guys are doing cocaine.
Cocaine on people's breasts. Yeah. You know, and Ronnie Cox is, who cares if it didn't
work?
It's
so 80s. It's so 80s.
That's like, I could see the reason for remaking it. And technologically, there's a good reason to make it because when he gets the suit, he runs, which I was like, oh, RoboCop has never run before. Yeah. And then he jumps over a wall and he's moving fast. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is what you can do. And I would have loved if they did it further. I thought he should have done things that you anatomically can't do. That I got it, like, he should have turned his waist 180 degrees and shot people. You know, he should have had both arms behind him and his head spin around.
Yeah.
They didn't do any of that. But the thing I really missed from that 80s movie is that 80s movie is so, it's a satire. And I didn't realize this until I got, like, the Blu-ray 20 years later, was realizing, okay, we're setting this in Detroit. That's totally fallen to shit.
Right.
The government is just sold out the police for private corporations who are now dissecting guys and just building them against their will because they own people.
Yeah.
Right.
And sending them out there and just seeing what happens. And crime is running rampant. And nobody's really doing anything about it. It's really the world we live in now.
No, yeah. I was gonna say, it was prophetic.
I hope somebody in like a far future finds like RoboCop and is like, oh, a documentary about Detroit. It's just like, I expect like that at some point's going to happen. We're just like, here's the, a history of Detroit, and it'll be like taught in like fifth grade classrooms.
And the new RoboCop had a perfect opportunity to go, yeah, we're kind of closer to here now. Now we can talk really about what's going on, and we can also talk about drones, because it's this whole idea. In the beginning of the movie, they have the ED-209s, you know, the big walking tanks.
Yeah, and so, they were like a joke in the original RoboCop.
Yeah, they were a joke. In this, they're more serious, and there's established that they have robots overseas, but they have never done a cyborg, and that's RoboCop's the first cyborg.
Right.
But, like, there's so much, like, drones are in the news every week. And still, you got the feeling that they were just too afraid of alienating anybody. They didn't want to touch it, and they just don't really tell a story about anything.
Right, and that's because it's, you know, the climate's a little bit different. RoboCop originally was not a huge release back in the 80s.
It was almost a B movie, quite a bit.
It was a B movie, so you are more free to go into, you know, you talk about satire. It totally satires business culture of the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Completely. And it doesn't spare
this
taking
one doesn't
corporate
do it.
Management, you know, and totally mocking that and making fun of what they were up to back then, and also calling attention to all the corruption and stuff like that.
Yeah, and this one doesn't really do that at all. Yeah, Michael Keaton plays...
he's the bad guy, right?
He plays the head of OCP in this, but they have him like a Steve Jobs type. He's always in jeans, and he's always like, hey, people like this. He's like, people don't like the robots. We should put a guy in a suit.
But is he, like, and he's good in it, though, right?
He's good. Michael Keaton's always good, but he's kind of Michael Keaton-y, so I never... you don't quite make the turn you do with Jeff Bridges and Iron Man of like, I love you. Oh my God, I hate you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, even when he turns evil, you're just like, Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
There is a scene where Gary Oldman plays the scientist in charge of RoboCop, and Michael Keaton yells at him, and then like Gary Oldman walks out of the room, and I turned to my wife and was like, that man just yelled at Commissioner Gordon.
Oh, I guess that would, yeah.
That's exactly what it was. But it was disappointing on somebody, and you had that cast. It's such a quirky cast that could go out there and give you weird stuff, because the guy plays RoboCop in the wife. I've never seen him before, and they're pretty bland. But you've got Michael Keaton, you've got Gary Oldman, you got Samuel L. Jackson, you got Jackie Earle Haley.
Mm-hmm.
You've got these people who are known for
like
being weird.
Yeah.
It's a great cast, and they're guys that have done crazy, weird, over the top stuff, and they're all restrained.
Yeah, that's a director problem right there.
That's a director problem, yeah. But obviously this is an aside going to this, and RoboCop's not going to be my greatest thing in the world this week.
Apparently.
But I was thinking about the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. I was like, I'm not having any fun in this watching this movie. And I had so much fun in the 2 minutes of Guardians of the Galaxy, and I know I will have that amount of fun, even if it's not going to be as great as the trailer looks. it will at least be as much fun for that 2 hours.
Yeah, and to build on what you're saying about fun, it starts with the people who are in the movie having fun. That's one of the reasons I keep bagging on the original Thor. For the first half of that movie, until they get to Earth, nobody looks like they're having any fun. Everything's stilted, Shakespearean. Right. It's like, oh, come on. I mean, and I'm talking Shakespearean in like the worst sense of like, you know, high school Shakespeare play where everybody's trying to be all serious.
Yeah,
I love the fact that they did so much Kirby stuff in Asgard, but then they made it all gold. And,
right.
And everyone's pontificating.
Where in the second Thor, Dark World, everybody's loose. Mm-hmm. They're having a better time. You're having more fun because they're not all uptight.
Right.
And it's just.
And they learned that from the first Thor because they knew right away once it played that once you get to Earth, that movie opens up. And that's why that movie was a hit. Had the whole movie taken place on Asgard like that, it would have bombed.
Yeah.
Right.
It was seeing him like out of place and awkward. And
With Natalie.
I want a horse!
Yeah. You know? With Natalie Portman and Kate Dennings and throwing coffee cups. It's like that's where that movie lived.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just rewatched Thor. Because I stole it from the future, and it's even like the stuff with him and Loki when they go back to Asgard is really great. Just seeing them like play up like their brotherly like rivalry, because it's like you figure they grew up together. How much can him invading Earth or whatever change that? And it changes it a lot. But there's a part where they're in the spaceship and Thor's like whapping all these buttons. And Loki's like gently, hit them gently. And he's like, I am hitting them gently. It's just like, it's not working. But it's like in his like Thorish voice.
I feel
and
like
it's like stuff like that is just beautiful.
I feel like when my boys grow up, that's going to be them.
Yeah. And that's what you want,
I
think.
Ben is just going to be the huge Thor.
And Sebastian's going to be Loki.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The schemer.
Yeah, he's just, I hope they'll both be, neither will be evil.
You hope not.
But I feel like just from their personality, Sebastian's just going to be the thinker and like leaning back, and Ben's just going to be,
Ben smash.
Yeah, I have to separate them now.
Yeah.
You can't give a 6-month-old bear hugs.
Yeah.
And my 6-year-old doesn't know that.
Right. Not yet.
Yeah, despite repeated tellings.
They're only half listening.
Yeah, but Marvel.
Who's writing Guardians? Do we know?
I don't know, but I know James Gunn is directing. And James Gunn, have you ever seen Slither?
Nope.
Slither is a great movie. It's streaming on Netflix. It is not store friendly. But it's a horror movie about it's about worms that like take over you from the inside, but you start getting like, first you're possessed and then you fight. But then they just get like bloated up. And it's really gross, but it's also hilarious. And it stars.
Is it a comedy?
It's like a horror comedy.
Okay.
Because it stars Nathan Fillion.
Okay.
I think it's Nathan Fillion. I want to say Elizabeth Banks. I think Elizabeth Banks is the girl. And Michael Rooker's in it from Walking Dead. But it's got a weird sense of humor where it's like it plays the horror up and it plays the grossness up. But then there's things that are so ridiculous in it that you're like, oh, I get it. It's almost like Sam Raimi. Like early Sam Raimi. Those Evil Dead movies where you're like, this is terrifying. Oh, wait a minute. I get what's going on.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm hoping this Guardians will be. Because then it looks like where it's just like, you know, the Nova Corps, I guess, is kind of like the Green Lantern Corps, I guess, where they're like, they police the universe. So they're like the space cops. And then you get these like 5 characters who, you know, like you said, they're swashbucking. They go around. They're causing all this havoc. But it's like they're just a bunch of jerks.
Yeah.
But it's like they're so likable because they're doing such like silly, crazy things. Like
I think it's like Firefly.
Yeah.
This could be the serenity for people that didn't see Firefly.
Yeah, I hope it taps into that Firefly, you know, and goes even beyond that. I hope it goes back to those 1930s swashbuckling films, like Captain Blood or, you know, stuff like that, where it's just like, and normally this pirate would be the bad guy, but he's just so gosh darn funny that you can't help but like the guy.
Yeah, they're a bunch of rogues.
Yeah
you're kind of, it's still pretty early, but it's like we've seen a little of like Benicio del Toro as the collector, and he's very like elegant, and his movements and stuff is very interesting. But it's like you don't really get a lot of like what he's going to do, and we haven't even, other than the very quick clip you see of Ronan, like Lee Pace as Ronan, it's just like, what's he going to be like? Is he going to be kind of like... I hope they don't play it too straight. Like, I hope he's not too much like, you know, the deep, crazy, evil bad guy. It's like, he could just be kind of like, just repeatedly just pissed off that he can't catch these guys.
Right.
Well, you know something that occurred to me when you said that Benicio del Toro is all elegant in this? I immediately thought, how much is he going to hate these 5 assholes when he meets them?
Yeah.
And that could be great. When you get that contrast of a rigid character with a very loose character, it the story still plays. You're not doing a parody of it.
Yeah.
That's what made Batman Brave and the Bold so great.
Yeah.
That the cartoon on Cartoon Network was, Batman's always a straight man.
Yeah.
And every DC hero, they found a new way to be crazy.
Yeah, right. like Green Arrow is like, yeah. he's always trying to one-up each other. And
yeah, stuff. Yeah. Aquaman, right. Aquaman is full of bravado. That outrageous!
Right. Yeah.
You know, but all of them, but Batman's still Batman. And so they're not playing a parody of Batman, even not to an Adam West degree on that show. He's right. still Batman.
Right.
But you get the comedy out of the interplay.
Right.
And you're already getting that from the trailer. So when you mentioned Novacore, I didn't think of this till now. John C. Reilly and the other guy, I always forget his name, but he was in Shaun of the Dead. The other guy who calls him a bunch of a-holes. Are they Novacore?
Yeah. That's that symbol. That
I didn't even think of that.
They're pretty much space cops. And then... who's the famous older actress who's in this movie? Do you guys know?
Older actress? No, I know Zoe Saldana's playing Gamora and Karen Gillan is playing
Nebula.
Nebula.
This person.
What other women are in this?
Judy Dench?
I think it's Judy Dench.
Judy Dench is in this?
She's the head of like the Nova Corps.
No, I think he threw out a name and he picked it up.
Maybe.
Judy Dench was M in James Bond.
Yeah, okay, it maybe can't not be her.
But it's somebody about like that like pay grade. Do you know what I mean?
Glenn
like
Close is in this.
Glenn Close.
She's not in the trailer, but I remember seeing her on IMDb.
Nova Corps. And it's just like, imagine how pissed off she's going to be when they can't catch these guys.
Well, that's great, because you know, you do that slow burn that, you know, Groucho Marx was able to inflict on various straight men in the Marx Brothers movies.
Yeah, Margaret Dumont.
So well. Margaret Dumont or any number of, you know, hacks. That's what I'm really looking forward to, is some of those scenes where you get into that confrontation where they actually have to talk to each other and all
that. Yeah, you get that from him. I really like that scene of him flipping the bird.
Yep.
And it's like blurred out.
I guess in the movie it's digitized. It won't be, yeah.
I don't know, because it's a funny joke, because it's digitized out from the screen.
Yeah.
And they're saying obscene gesture initiated.
Yeah, if you actually, we had to pause the trailer because, you know, I have all this free time on my hands. And we kept pausing the trailer to read like the rap sheets.
No, you have customers that you need to service.
Yeah, well.
So people are saying, hey, show that again.
Show that trailer. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. It's customer service. And it's like Rocket Raccoon. It's like tendency to bite and 19 counts of like arson. So this asshole's like running around setting fires of things. He's broken out of all these prisons. Star-Lord is actually like a registered sex offender. It says something like, I wish we paused it and I wrote it down or something, but it says something like, he had done some like negotiation or something with like some princess that he wasn't allowed to do, and like now he's like wanted for this, and like Groot's wanted, and they're all wanted for like some kind of specific crime that's got to be some kind of like interplanetary thing. It's like GTA or something, or it's like three letters, but it's like they're all wanted for it. You know, it's like they show the prison breakout scene with like Rocket and Groot. It's like I think everything about this just looks great.
And they say Groot's like totally innocent in it, like Rocket Raccoon's just a bad influence on him.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have turned to crime if he wasn't.
I cannot wait to hear Vin Diesel.
Yeah. And I'm not a big Vin Diesel fan, but Dave.
But Vin Diesel was the Iron Giant.
Yep.
That's what I was like. I like the voice in that, and I think that's kind of like what Groot will be like. But Dave Navarro showed me this video, and it was like. It was Vin Diesel on like the set of one of the Fast and the Furious movies, and he's in these big stilts, and he's like walking around during like
because he wanted to be on set,
and they were
when they were doing it, even though his character is all CGI,
having to do a voice.
He's like, no, put the dots on me.
He wanted to do the Golem kind of thing.
Motion
capture.
It's him like practicing on these stilts with these like longer like claw arms. So he's like Groot size, and it's like he's just like walking around doing this, like just trying to get in like the groove of it. And he just looks like he's having, like you said, he's like has such a fun time on the set. It's just like it's gonna make for a great, great,
and you know,
like, movie.
And this is something we come back to all the time, but that sense of fun that Marvel's having is coming across so well. I think that's one of the big problems Warner Bros. Is having with DC, is when Batman's not supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
So that's working. Right. But, you know, Green Lantern was supposed to be fun, and it felt forced.
Well, and
it felt like, oh, you guys like Tony Stark? Well, I'm Hal Jordan. You know what? It was like in Iron Man 2 when Sam Rockwell comes out dancing, trying to be Tony Stark.
Yeah. And but that was like in a funny
He's like, way. Hey, better than a bunch of cheerleaders. But it falls flat.
Sam Rockwell nailed it.
Yeah, Sam Rockwell nailed it. But that is what the whole Green Lantern movie did.
Yeah.
It
wasn't ironic at
all. Right.
Yeah, think about it. It's like, you know, Hal Jordan has a couple scenes. I've seen it a couple times. And he has a couple scenes. And everyone he interacts with, you're pretty much just like, he's just kind of a jerk. And he's doing jerk things. But then if you watch Iron Man 3.
But he doesn't have Ryan Reynolds doesn't have that Robert Downey Jr. charm Ryan, because so few people
do. He'll
interact
with that kid, and he's being a jerk to the kid. He's like, go make me a sandwich. Get out of here. I'm driving away now. See you later. Like, he's really kind of mean to that kid, but it's so playful.
Yeah, I feel like if...
It actually, like, works. There's, and he's so likable.
There are so few people on this planet that can play asshole and charming at the same time.
Yep.
And every time we find one, we make him Sherlock Holmes.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like Robert Downey Jr. and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Because you have to, because that's the kind of the character, mm-hmm. you know. And that's why everybody likes the Heath Ledger Joker, because he brings that kind of fun and that sense of you know, it's a dark humor to be sure, but it's still a sense of humor to Batman. If they ever do a Harley, you know, Batman movie, it's gonna have to follow that same template.
Yeah,
Harley. I could see them doing a Harley movie before doing a Harley Batman movie, because she's more innocent than Joker. She's not really a murderer.
Right.
And she's so light and bouncy that it would be too much of a contrast in like a Christopher Nolan universe.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, if DC but isn't that always Marvel and DC? Marvel's always having more fun than DC.
Yeah.
You know, Stan Lee always had more fun than Carmine Infantino. That's just this guy, or Julius Schwartz.
Julius Schwartz
looked like he never had fun. Neil Adams is having a kind of fun that only he is having.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I guess like it got like funner for DC like 10 years after Marvel started.
Well, they started
Glenn Wein and all these guys come over to DC and they're
they started picking up Marvel guys.
Yeah.
Because because all the guys in the 70s that were fun at Marvel, you know, the Roy Thomas, Len Wein, Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill, they were all at Marvel.
Right.
Yeah. And they all went back and forth.
Yeah.
Marv Wolfman, the Wolfman.
But that's, you know, having been from that generation, that's also why I'm looking forward to all this space stuff, because that's what I grew up on. I grew up on Kree Skrull War. I grew up on, you know, Dark Phoenix and all that stuff. So that's why I'm really looking forward to this Guardians of the Galaxy movie, because that taps right into where I'm coming from as a comic book fan, what I grew up with.
And I was even thinking the other day on that note, you talk about like some of the space stuff they're doing, and it's like it's going to be interesting to see what ties they make to like the Avengers movie, because like, well, they'll be like, well, what's Star-Lord? What planet he's from? Well, he's from Earth, or whatever the space people call it. And then they're like, well, what do we know about Earth? It's like, well, not much. Apparently, the fucking Asgardians and these Sitari guys tried to invade it, and they fucking blew up a hole. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's like, so the Earth is now, because of Avengers, going to be like a rumor planet where people are like, we don't know much about it because no one's really been there except the Asgardians and these other guys, and they really fucked some stuff up.
And that pays off the Thanos scene in Avengers.
Exactly.
Is the Chitauri saying we don't know enough about them to court Earth is to court death.
Yeah.
And then Thanos smiles because he's in love with death.
Yeah.
And that's also an interesting tie. Everybody's saying, where's Thanos? Where's Thanos? Because we show him in Avengers. We know he's not in Avengers 2 because that's Ultron. Because we know it's the Age of Ultron. We thought he was going to be Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's Ronan. What I've heard is Ronan's the main villain and Collector's a side villain or else a mastermind.
Yeah.
But Gamora is Thanos'
adopted daughter. Right.
Right. And you were telling me this yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they change, because in the book, you know, Star-Lord, the reason he's called Star-Lord is because he's the son of the, you know, he's the son of the Imperial, Emperor.
Yeah, what are those
by
guys?
by an Earth Star Emperor? Yeah, Star Emperor.
Yeah.
He should be Star Emperor. But he's the, you know, the bastard child of the Star Emperor, and that's why he's got that connection. So it'll be interesting to see what they change from the book. And that's what I like about what Marvel does. They're not afraid to make those changes. You know, they know what manga and anime fans have known.
Yeah, but for something like Gamora connected to Thanos, we have Thanos in a movie.
Right.
So they could come right out and say that.
If they want to.
And then people are like, oh, that's now, that guy from that one scene
in the
Avengers.
Comics, Joe, is Gamora his birth daughter, or is it, I thought it was a rumor. Like, she claimed to be.
She's adopted.
Okay.
I mean, in the 2008 reboot where she, you know, where she comes from, really, they say she's adopted. She's supposed to be the last of her race, which is a thing that they carried over from the 1968 book, where it's Vince Astro, which he goes into space as part of a, you know, he's in suspended animation, and it takes 10,000 years and he reaches a planet, and then that's where it kicks off. But he's not the Galactic Emperor's son. He's just an Earth astronaut guy. And I think they're kind of going to combine some of the aspects of the 68 and some of the aspects of the 2008 reboot. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Well, that's a big thing, because let's talk a little bit about the original Guardians of the Galaxy stories. One of the reasons I never read the 2008 was because I didn't like the old team. And they were 68, and they were like, they were so they were
really goofy.
They weren't D-list. They were like G-list. They yeah. would be because they appeared in like Marvel Premiere.
They were they weren't everybody even else's like, book. They didn't really have their own book for very long. I mean, they were like below the Champions. That's how low they were.
Right.
Yeah. For all you people out listening who know who the fucking Champions are.
Yeah. Well, you know what? With our audience, you know the Champions. You know
someone
champions.
Out there knows
they have that. Angel and Iceman and Ghost Rider and Hercules. Yeah. And Black Widow. So if you know those five characters, you know who the Champions are.
You know what you're getting.
Because that was a book where they were all standing in the same room.
Yeah. But the original Guardians of the Galaxy, none of those characters ever really went anywhere by themselves. You didn't see the only one that none of them really had their own book. None of them really popped up anywhere else. They weren't in Team Up. They weren't in Thing 2 and 1.
Yeah.
They never really went anywhere. They would guest star in like Iron Man. They would guest star in somebody else's book for like two issues and then pop out again. They were in Korvac Saga. It's probably their big moment of fame, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And then in the late 80s, in 1990, they got their own series. And I think the reason they got their own series was it was the boom. And Marvel was like, we can't stop printing titles.
Right.
What do we have that we
have
didn't
these characters
use?
Lying on the floor?
Yeah, it's when you know, it's when
there.
Prowler got another limited series. It's when when Johnny Blaze had his own title as a spinoff to Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
It's also when the big three all had second heroes that were them.
Right.
It was like there was Thor and Thunderstrike, Iron Man and War Machine, Captain America and U.S. Agent.
Yep.
And there, Guardians of the Galaxy was just another place to put. I think it was a Silver Surfer spinoff at that point. Because that was the big cause. But Jim Valentino would draw that, and it was such a D-level book then.
Right.
That when they formed Image, and they announced the seven founders of Image, was they said, it's Todd McFarlane who was drawing Spider-Man. Oh, my God, this sells millions of copies. Right. Jim Lee is drawing X-Men. Well, he's just as big as Todd McFarlane. Rob Liefeld, okay, regardless of what you think of him, he was selling a lot of books.
He was selling a lot of books.
Eric Larson, yeah, he's still on Spider-Man, and he's selling what McFarlane's selling.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jim Valentino, who?
Yeah.
He's doing Guardians of the
Galaxy.
Why him? You know, because he was friends with them.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't even a big name.
Yeah.
At that, because Guardians of the Galaxy wasn't big then. And it was the kind of cosmic for Marvel that I hated, which is... that 70s Roy Thomas, Jim Starlin kind of cosmic, and we've talked about this on the show before, It's so trippy and more based in mythology than science fiction, and very, it's all about power cosmics and the universe coming together as a being, and we are all one, and I am channeling the million souls through, it goes right over my head, and it's not grounded
in
anything.
If you're not into that epic scale.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, and you're not, which is fine.
I'm not.
If
I love
you're not an epic scale. You're gonna hate those books.
And I, you know what? When I read Lord of the Rings, I only cared about Frodo because I wanted to see this little guy who was unequipped to go to Mount Doom try to get to Mount Doom. When they would go to Aragorn and Gandalf in the wars, I'm like, all right, you guys seem able to handle this.
Yeah, Aragorn's one of the least interesting characters in that book. He's born to be king. He has prophecies up the ass, so he knows he's gonna be king.
Unlike the movie, he doesn't have a character arc.
He doesn't have a problem.
No, he doesn't have a problem. In the movie, they lower him
right, so
he can rise to be king. But in the book, he's kind of there.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about like all cosmic. And I read Silver Surfer for a long time. I read the 80s series that Marshall Rogers did. And then Jim Starlin took over with Ron Lim. I read that book for a long time. And it was still kind of hard to contain it. And I think I liked it because I like Silver Surfer from Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
But coming around... That's why I didn't think I was going to like Guardians of the Galaxy. That's why I didn't read it in 1990. That's why I didn't read it in 2008. That's why I'm not reading it in 2013. But after seeing this trailer, as I said, I downloaded the 2008 series, and I went back and I was like, finally, Marvel has a space series that is grounded in character.
Yeah, you're afraid it's going to be Star Jammers, but it's not.
Yeah, or Adam Warlock.
Or Adam Warlock, which he was in the original series. But, that's how low the original Guardians of the Galaxies were, is that in 1980, they can pull that reboot where wipe everybody out, completely new characters, let's go.
Yeah, just keep the trademark going.
Yeah. It's a whole different team.
Yeah, completely different team.
Right.
It's like, you know, what if the Fantastic Four was, you know, like Thor, all of a sudden became, you know, Thor, you know, and or three other people.
Spider-Man, Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and the Hulk.
Yeah.
Which happened for three issues by Art Adams, and it's amazing. I finally was able to wrap my head around Guardians of the Galaxy in a way I never did before. And actually going back, You know when you have that, you find a run that's like 5 years old, and you're like, yeah. Where was I when this was going on? I know exactly where I was when this was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never had room in my budget for a Guardians of the Galaxy. But what I didn't realize was it came out of Annihilation, which was, I believe, the best Marvel crossover of the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And it went totally under the radar because it ran during Civil War.
Yeah.
And it's better than Civil War.
And it's actually been out of print for a while. They're finally reprinting that stuff.
They had a really nice oversized hardcover of it.
Yeah.
Because it was all B-listers. I think Silver Surfer was the biggest hero. And it was all of their space characters, but without the Avengers or the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, cleaning up a lot of like space continuity, I heard, where it's like, you know, they redid, you know, some of the Nova Corps stuff to show you who those characters were. They readjusted the Kree and the Skrulls. Like, pretty much every player was in it. The Shi'ar played a role in it.
Have
like,
you read Annihilation, Steve?
No, I've actually, they just solicited maybe a month ago or 2 months ago an omnibus that collects the whole run. So I ordered that because I've heard nothing but good things about it. And like I said,
that might be worth getting.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
It's been out of print for so long, it's been impossible to try to find. There's only like weird offshoots from Annihilation available.
Well, you know, the premise of Annihilation. Joe, have you read it?
No.
Oh, I'm the only one that's read it. The premise, the reason it's called Annihilation is because Annihilus tries. It's not Annihilus is a villain. He comes from the negative zone to attack the universe, which always happens. And he does it at another part of the universe away from Earth. And even if the Earth heroes could get involved, they're all stuck in Civil War, so they can't get anything done. It's a government lockdown, that story.
Yep.
So this is what happens when Annihilus tries to take over the universe, and no one from Earth gets involved.
Yeah.
And that's where Guardians of the Galaxy starts, because you have a Drax limited series that changes him from the big doofy guy with the cape to the guy with the tattoos. You have a Silver Surfer limited series, while Silver Surfer was canceled.
Yep.
I believe there were four limited series, and it was kind of like Infinite Crisis. I forget what the other two were, but they all kind of tied into each other. And then you had the six issues of Annihilation, of all of them fighting Annihilus. And I remember reading and thinking, this is amazing. Why did this go under the radar? Because of marquee names.
It's like Justice League.
But that's where, when they come together to fight Annihilus, it's the guys that become Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. And it sold well enough to do, hey, let's do an ongoing, and that becomes the run that we're making a movie of.
Yeah, it's like, what if the DeMatteis Justice League run had another name besides Justice League, where it wasn't already tied to an ongoing, you know, story arc. Right. They just said, we're going to take all these B-listers and throw them together, and it works. But we talked about this before, how sometimes getting those B and C-listers together can be a lot more fun because the writers don't have to worry about continuity. They're not so rigidly stuck in character. They can play with these guys more, and they have more fun.
Yeah.
Storylines loosen up, and all of a sudden you get a genius run.
Yeah,
and it was a lot of hit or miss, but yeah, like you said, it's like somebody finds a new spin to put on these characters that haven't been trudged through 100 times, like, you know, Captain America, Iron Man, or somebody, and it's like, yeah, you can do whatever you want with, you know, Star-Lord or Rocket Raccoon or Nebula or whoever, you know, but it's all these, like, cosmic characters that, you know, like, largely just went unused, and then now somebody can turn them into gold, and it sells great. Yeah. Well, even Bendis has run on this. It's not great, this new book they've got, but it's entertaining. I read it every month.
Oh, it's fun as hell.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, it's they're all just kind of running around, like you said. It's like Star-Lord's in, like, a pub somewhere and, like,
getting drunk and gets hit on by a Skrull pretending to be Gamora, and it's just wonderful. It's just hilarious.
You know, so it's going to be really interesting to see what this movie looks like, how it ties into the bigger Marvel universe, what they tease, you know, as far as, like, Thanos. I mean, because as far as, you know, we read a couple of synopsises for it online, and basically, the Guardians are all in prison, they break out together, Star-Lord steals an Infinity Stone, and then Ronan, the Accuser, and then somebody's named the Pursuer, both Kree, go after him. The Collector is kind of, like you said, like a secondary role or something, or he sends maybe Ronan, I don't know. But it's like the Collector's headquarters.
Sounds like he might be running the black market.
Yeah. Well, the Collector's headquarters, they said, is the severed head of an Eternal with, like, all his stuff in it.
There's an Eternal in this?
Well, the Collector is an Eternal.
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, I guess
he's an Eternal.
Or maybe it's a Celestial.
Celestial.
And it's.
Yeah, that's in the book. That's the No Way.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Collector's a Celestial, not an Eternal. I was getting my Elder races confused.
The Celestials are the Giants.
Yes.
The Eternals. The Celestials were in the Eternals. That's why you're getting confused.
Yeah, okay.
The Eternals was Jack Kirby's trying to do New Gods again in Marvel. They were human sides. The Celestials were like...
whoever the big guys are.
Celestials, they were all kind of like Galactus.
Yeah.
So they're
inside like a severed head, and that's like a bar or something in space. And it's just like, think about that concept. It's the severed head of a giant eons old alien that's a bar run by the collector with all this crazy shit, and that's where they all hang out. It's That sounds awesome.
I want to go to there.
Yeah. It's just like, it's such a goofy premise.
That's like the bar on Tatooine where you're like, dun, 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 dun. I want to go there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a scene like that.
That'd be funny.
Everybody's tried to recreate
it. Would be great
that.
If they could pay homage to that in some way without getting sued.
Well, I've kind of heard that that's what everyone's
well,
saying
they're
about.
They're Disney, so they don't have to get
Disney,
sued.
That's true.
That's what everyone's saying about like Rocket Raccoon and Star-Lord is this is going to be like what Han Solo and Chewbacca were to like pop culture. This is like this generation's coming up like version of like
certainly hope so.
Yeah, well, Marvel's banking a lot on this. I mean, at Toy Fair, we talked about this last week when we talked about Toy Fair. Hasbro really only showed Guardians of the Galaxy stuff.
Yeah.
They showed, like, a Rocket Raccoon that's life-size, and they showed a whole line of Marvel Legends figures. They didn't really show anything else. They didn't show anything for the X-Men movie. They weren't going to continue Captain America or Spider-Man lines. It's all Guardians of the Galaxy, multiple scales.
Yeah.
They're really banking on this. And I think Marvel, you know, Marvel has FU money.
Yeah.
That's what
this point,
is.
They do.
That's what this is like, we can spend $100 million on a book that didn't sell.
Right.
Yeah.
And see if we can get a hit movie out of it.
Yeah. In contrast, what aren't we talking about?
Fantastic Four.
Yeah. Yeah, which is arguably one of our favorite books sometimes.
And that was, we've been planning an all Fantastic Four, the Fantastic Four cast for a while. In fact, there were a couple of episodes we were going to do it, and we got sidetracked right away. But
as per usual.
But that was the other big news this week, is that 20th Century Fox, not Marvel Studios, for example. So not the studio that, even though they're Marvel properties, you have to remember, this is not the studio that gave us Avengers and Iron Man and
Thor
and Captain America and Guardians of the Galaxy. This is the studio that is giving us the X-Men movies and the previous Fantastic Four movies, which I think we can all agree have been fucking hit or miss.
Oh, totally. They're either really entertaining or, God, are they
There's
shit.
There's, like, things you like about each of them. You know, Daredevil's one of those, I think, isn't Daredevil Fox.
I think Daredevil was Fox. They just, the rights just reverted back to Marvel, which is why they're doing the Netflix TV show.
Right. But, you know, it's like, you know, there's some things I like in the X-Men movies, and I really did like X-Men First Class. But overwhelmingly, like, those Fantastic Four movies were, you know, it was a bowl of shit.
We're just saying there's six X-Men movies.
Right.
Four of them are great. And two of them are steaming piles of shit. Now, I'm counting both Wolverine movies.
Yeah.
In with the X-Men movies. Two of them are horrible. And four of them are great. So, obviously, the needle's all over the map with 20th Century
Fox.
Well,
now, I heard with this new X-Men movie, it's like, I don't know what's first. Like what the number one movie is, but this is the second most expensive movie Fox has ever made.
It's gigantic. I feel like none of us have quite wrapped our heads around how big this movie is.
Well, I always go back to
it. It has 27 characters in it.
If you look at all the promotional stuff from the San Diego last year, it was all like Sentinels this, Sentinels that. If you watch that trailer, there's not one Sentinel in the entire trailer.
Well, I think they're hiding them. We've seen set photos of Sentinels.
I agree, but just think of how much stuff we saw in that trailer, and none of it has to do with Sentinels. And then we're going to get Sentinels on top of that.
And how much are we going to spend in each world? Because we've now seen the trailer, and we've seen a lot of still pictures. But we've seen Old Man Logan with Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. And then we've seen Younger Logan with Michael Fassbender. And I am now blanking on Professor X. James McAvoy.
Great McAvoy.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got that before you guys did. But how much time do we spend in each? This movie is so big that they cut Rogue out. Like, they've had pictures of Rogue. Anna Paquin is playing Rogue again.
She was on the cover of one of the X-Men magazine covers.
Yeah, they had X-Men magazine. I think it was Empire magazine, had 25 covers, one for each character.
Yeah.
There's a ton of new characters. Bishop is in this, Sunspot, Blink, Quicksilver, who is going to be a different actor than the Quicksilver in Avengers 2.
Yeah, because of the different
rights. Yeah. There is just so much that they couldn't fit Rogue in the story, and Anna Paquin is a much bigger star than when she did the trilogy.
Yeah. And that's what scares me about this one, because you're just so afraid it's going to end up being like Green Lantern or Iron Man 2, where they just try to stuff 10 pounds of shit into a 5-pound bag, and it doesn't work.
But it is Bryan Singer coming back, and Bryan Singer is always, at the very least, he's a thoughtful director. I think he's in that Christopher Nolan frame of like, think of all of his films. His two X-Men films, Superman Returns, Apt Pupil, Usual Suspects, they're meticulous. So I think just the fact that he cut Rogue out is the opposite of what you're thinking, because he's looking at the whole film and going, how do I balance everybody?
Yeah.
You know what? Rogue doesn't balance. she's a fan favorite character, and Anna Paquin's a big name, but she's got
to
come out. I think
he did say that in like Twitter or something. He said something like, you know, it's no offense to her. She did a great job. She did a great part. Yeah. There's just not enough room for it. She'll be on a deleted scene on the DVD for sure. You know, this isn't anything personal.
Yeah, so I think there will be a balance, unlike Amazing Spider-Man 2, which every time I see a trailer, I like the trailers, and then I worry about the movie. It happened. I saw it another trailer last night. Before the movie, and it was a little different. It wasn't quite as funny as the first one. It had different scenes in it, and it was like, I'm liking what I'm seeing, and I don't see how this is one movie.
Well, you're nervous because there hasn't been a good Spider-Man movie since the original Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, and the last one was...
The reboot just didn't work.
I don't know if it was... Dafoe came out, too, and he's just like, oh, it's the same movie. So that's like...
That's what James Franco said.
Said the same thing. We're just like, they kind of just remade the same movie.
From 10 years ago.
Yeah. You know, and I think we've said before, we all like, what's his name better, Spider-Man and Peter Parker, but it's Andrew Garfield. They didn't do much different than...
Yeah, Andrew Garfield is the Pierce Brosnan of Spider-Man's, where he's great for the role, and they're putting him in bad movies.
Yeah. The movie's crap around.
So I am hoping this pulls it out. And I know they're really pushing for the Sinister Six. And there's a shot in the trailer where you see it looks like Norman Osborn is walking down a hallway, and there's a set of octopus arms and there's a set of vulture wings.
Yeah.
And we all so Spider-Man 4 is supposed to be maybe Sinister Six. I want to see that happen. I think the suit looks fantastic. I think Andrew Garfield is even better in this. I think he's playing it funnier and a little more confident. Yeah. He's a little more Romita Spider-Man than Ditko Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Because as we said, Tobey Maguire never got out of Ditko Spider-Man.
No, he was...
Even when they were doing the black costume saga in Venom, he was still a Ditko Peter.
Yeah.
But that's... that's the one... I am more worried about Spider-Man than I am about X-Men. I don't see how X-Men will work, but I feel like Bryan Singer will make it work. I don't see how Spider-Man will work, and I feel like it won't work.
Yeah. I just look at the Rhino costume, and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something where it's like, I'll give it a chance. The same with us, like, Fantastic Four we were talking about. It got recast, and it's all these, like, really younger kids, and... You know, when I look at the picture, and I know the one guy's the Human Torch because everyone's like losing their minds that they cast like a black.
Yeah, it's a guy from it's a guy from Chronicle who the director Josh Trank. It's the only movie he's ever made. So I think he just wants to keep somebody around that he likes.
Right, but it's just like when I look at the other two guys, and I can't tell which one's supposed to be the Thing and which one's supposed to be Mr. Fantastic. It's
that's
just
a
like,
problem.
Yeah, and you know that's kind of what I was looking at that poster. You know, the images of all the actors. I'm like, Like, I knew when they cast the original Fantastic Four who everyone was going to be because they got people that look like what you'd think they look like.
Right, when you saw Michael Chiklis, you were like, great.
Yeah, there's the thing.
There was a great meme going around that was like, they said you missed your perfect Fantastic Four, and I forget who the Sue and the Johnny, I think they were actors I didn't really know, but they picked David Tennant as Reed Richards and Nick Offerman as the Thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I can see that.
See, and everyone in this room was smiling.
Yeah.
If you had a movie with those two, I don't care who Sue and Johnny are. Dude, Ron Swanson saying it's clobbering time?
Yeah. I've heard rumors, too, that they're pushing this like diversity stuff with this project really big, you know, the Black Human Torch or whatever.
But, you know, we had a Black Alicia in the last movies, and it's not like that really changed anything.
Yeah, I don't understand why everyone makes such a big stink out of it. But then the other one I heard is that it's going to be Victoria Von Doom instead of Victor Von Doom.
I've heard that was debunked.
Oh, really?
But I don't know. But I've also heard that this is going to be Ultimate Fantastic Four, and that's another problem I have. It's like, in my opinion, Ultimate Fantastic Four didn't work. You know, it got off to a rocky start. It had good sales in the beginning because it was Bendis at his peak, and it was one of the Kuberts. I can't remember if it was Andy or Adam. But it wasn't a great story. And then he dumped it immediately, and then it floundered for a while. And then Millar picked it up. And then the only reason it sold then was Millar came up with the idea of Marvel Zombies in Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And then guess what? We had 7 different limited series about Marvel Zombies, and Ultimate Fantastic Four went in the tank again. It's like saying, hey, the next X-Men movie is going to be Ultimate X-Men. Why? There are better stories with the original stuff. It's like, why can't... And here's another problem. We talk about Fantastic Four all the time. You have two source materials that are modern. On the one hand, you have Ultimate Fantastic Four, which I've just given you a history of. The other hand, you have Jonathan Hickman's Fantastic Four.
I know. Why do you want the Hickman run?
Yeah, and I think the problem with the Hickman run is... It's so dense, but it's like the same thing with this cast. Is like we're supposed
to believe...
But
you don't even have to... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you believe that like Reed Richards is supposed to be the smartest man on the planet, and then they cast somebody who looks like he's 19 years old.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to believe this guy's supposed to be the smartest guy on the planet? It's just like, come on.
Yeah,
and are they going to change it even that much? Are they even going to go into space?
Well, it looks like they're making changes. I mean, Marvel properties will change something about their books and you know, 3 out of 4 times, it works in the movie because they changed it for a reason. With this Fantastic Four, from the casting to sounds like the plot and choosing Ultimate over Hickman, it sounds like they're just making changes to make changes and be different. You know, Iron Man 3, I know it's divisive, but as a movie, that change worked, even though it was a massive change sure. from the book. Mm-hmm. This time, I just, like you said, John, I don't see how some of these changes are going to work, even as a movie.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the thing. I mean, obviously, we haven't seen this movie. The only actor I know of the four of them, Human Torch, I saw in Chronicle. I really didn't like Chronicle very much. I know Sue is being played by Kate Mara, who is in House of Cards, which I love. I didn't find her that interesting in House of Cards. But yeah, with Marvel Studios, and even with some of the 20th Century Fox stuff, or Spider-Man, when they make a huge change with a character, there's still something of the quality of the original character. Like when they announced Robert Downey Jr., people were like, no, you know, Tony Stark's not supposed to be that quirky or that funny, but he is supposed to. But with Robert Downey Jr., he's very smart, and he has a history of alcohol abuse. Mm-hmm. And I was like, he can play that undercurrent of Tony. I was like, that's brilliant. Andrew Garfield, he's drawn because he looks drawn.
Yeah.
He's built like a Mark Bagley drawing.
Yeah.
And he's got the sincerity of Peter. So even though, oh, this is weird, Hugh Jackman is a foot taller than Logan is supposed to be. And we didn't know who he was at that point, but he's got the slow burn of Logan.
Yeah.
Like he's not going the gruff bub, I'm the best at what I do, and right. drinking and pushing people around. But he's got that like leave me alone quality.
Yeah.
That's each one of them. Chris Evans, that was a big problem because Chris Evans had been Human Torch.
Yeah.
And granted it was a Marvel Studios production, but we're like, he's played an asshole in everything.
Yeah.
Like everybody was mad about Captain America, but he got the earnestness and he's the very white, clean-cut, blonde boy.
He played it totally 40s, which is what you're supposed to do.
And he told, played a period, and then in Avengers, he's still playing it 40s as a man out of time. Is every one of those characters, no matter how far out they go, Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Still plays the bullshit, no-nonsense, I will throw you under the bus Nick Fury. And obviously, the ultimate Nick Fury was modeled after Sam Jackson, but if you're coming in expecting, you know, the Gray Temple World War II veteran. But with this Fantastic Four, I'm not getting that from this cast. And the Ben Grimm is Drake Bell, who's a good actor, young British actor. He's in King Kong. He's good in things. I don't see Ben Grimm anywhere in that. Mm. I don't see the qualities of those four characters. And as I've said many times, it's my favorite comic book that's ever been published. I'm not seeing anything of those four, not even from the Ultimate version. You're right. I think you're absolutely right. 20th Century Fox made the Tim Story films, which the first one made a ton of money and they didn't know why.
Right.
The second one did not make money.
And they didn't know why.
They didn't. They knew, just as little about it.
Yeah.
So now they still have the rights. Nobody knew was coming in. So they're like, let's just change everything and try it again.
I just think it's everyone's spinning their wheels because, you know, Marvel did. They did 3 Iron Mans. They've got 2 Captain Americas. They've got 2 Thors. They got Avengers. So it's like, and the Hulk movie was them too. So it's like 8 or 9 films already, and they're all hits. And I think when they release a trailer like Guardians of the Galaxy, and everyone sees like, look, it's different. It's quirky. It's wild. It's just like everyone's just spinning the wheels. They have no idea what Marvel's doing. And I think Marvel knows what they're doing. Like that studio is very strong, and I think they haven't had any misses. And Guardians look like it'll be another hit. And I've heard Captain America, they're saying, is the best one so far.
Winter Soldier looks awesome.
It looks phenomenal. And, we were talking right before we got on the air. Marvel is pushing this so hard that they're making Guardians of the Galaxy their summer movie.
Yeah.
Where Captain America is coming out in April, which is not a big month.
No.
Like, even if they moved it to May, it would be the big blockbuster. But it looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
It looks like everything that people are yelling at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thinks Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. should be on a weekly basis, which can never happen.
It's not possible.
Because it's a television show.
Right.
I agree. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be better than it is now, and I think it's going on that path.
Yeah.
Whether it's going fast
enough.
Well,
it's typical Joss Whedon. It's going to be
better.
Yeah,
first season sucks.
Yeah.
Unless you're Firefly, in which case you'll be canceled in the first season.
Yeah.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week, I bought the new mini iPad, which I've had the iPad 1 since it came out, so it's 4 years old. I still like it. It was my big problem with it is that Apple stopped supporting it a couple of years ago, so it has OS 4. Now it has these problems where it keeps dropping the Wi-Fi in my own house. It's very slow. Most of the apps aren't updating for it. It's one of my problems with hardware is that it's not so much that the hardware breaks down, is that this, once the software goes beyond it, it forgets about it. So I've been needing an iPad for a couple of years. And then I had a couple of trips planned. And so instead of bringing a laptop, I was like, this is the perfect time to get the iPad. And oh my God, it's amazing. So it, I got the mini because I realized when you, it's not much smaller than the iPad Air. You're losing mostly bezel. And the Retina screen is fantastic.
I can't believe how light that thing is.
Yeah, and it's so light. It weighs, what, I would say a third of the iPad one.
Yeah,
it's wild.
And the screen looks amazing. And the nicest thing about the mini, which is why I bought it, is you can hold it in one hand. Which means you probably won't get the horrible dents I have in my iPad 1. It's beautiful. It runs every app flawlessly. And the big thing for the podcast, you can run GarageBand right out of the iPad.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I think what we'll do is when some travel situations, maybe C2E2s, maybe conventions, it's going to be a great alternative to just trying to record stuff in notes. You know, in days where we can't get all the microphones and the headphones and everything set up, we'll be able to do podcasting in a new way, which I think is really exciting.
Yeah, because we could do on the road, like we could do, you know, Caffeinated Comics coming live from DanCon or something like that.
Yeah, I think that would be really fun. But I was amazed by how far it's gotten. And again, it's typical of Apple design where you go, I didn't need this. This is a smaller iPad. Why the hell do I need a smaller iPad? And then you get it. You're like, oh, it bends to me so well.
Yeah.
It was not cheap because it's Apple.
Right.
I also got as much memory as possible because I want videos to react to every mood I'm in. I want to be in a 6-hour plane in the middle of Lord of the Rings and go, nope, it's the Star Wars trilogy now. Yeah, you know what? It's an entire season of Simpsons.
Yeah.
And it has a flash memory that where I can do that. It also fits in the inside pocket of a jacket.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So it's literally a phone with a much, much better screen. Because there's things that your phone is not good for. And there's places where you don't want to drag your laptop around. I'm going to be using it constantly.
You're going to love that thing.
You'll get your money's worth.
Yeah.
Eventually. It'll take a while to get my money's worth, but eventually.
Give it a year.
Joe, what about you?
Well, I don't normally get excited about a new title just after the first issue. Even something as good as Superior Spider-Man, my first reaction after the first issue was much more like relief than excitement.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And I say it all the time. You were so angry at Spider-Man 700. It was our first episode, and you're like, we're going to do a podcast. Well, I'm going to yell about Spider-Man.
I was virulent, irate for that one. But, I mean, normally I need 6 to 10 issues to warm up to a book. But the Ms. Marvel, the new Ms. Marvel book,
yeah.
I think this has, I mean, obviously they can still have time to turn it to shit. But I think this is going to be amazing because they're making me feel all the feels with this one.
Yeah.
Ms. Marvel is a teenage Muslim girl from New York who gets caught in the Inhumans,
the Terrigen
cloud, and becomes Ms. Marvel, where she changes her physical form, where she's, you know, lighter skinned and red hair and things like that. But I like it because we keep talking about how, like, if you have a gay character, for example, if you do it as, here is our gay character, falls flat on its face.
Like North Star, depending on who's writing him.
But if you have a character who, by the way, he happens to be gay, that character works, you know, 9 times out of 10, whereas the other one fails 9 times out of 10. This one, it's totally natural. They don't hit you over the head with the fact that she's Muslim, but they do work it in. It is part of her everyday life, and they go into her family and how they interact with each other.
Yeah.
And the writing is good. The dialogue is good. You can see where there might be some conflicts ahead.
Yeah, it's like and you're treating her like believable. Her own character.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
totally. It's like it's the same thing where you meet like Peter Parker's friends and everything like in those first couple issues. They're really just like world building. Like you get a really good slice of this woman's life. before any superpowers come into it. So you know what her parents are like, you know, the relationship with her father and her brothers right, and her sisters and everything. And it's how she's trying to fit in
with the douchey friends yeah. from high school.
Right. And it's just, you know. But it's like, it's totally, it's a great book. And we, the first issue sold out and actually, according to the sales on, with Diamond, sold better than Superior Spider-Man the same week it came out.
And Superior Spider-Man is still the number one Marvel book?
It's our number one Marvel
book. Wow.
So yeah. we sold out of Ms. Marvel, because we went off of the last Ms. Marvel
run
book, which was, I think technically her name's Captain Marvel,
yeah.
which is cool. The Carol Danvers book. But like Joe said, it's a great book. It's totally worth checking. We've actually got second prints are on the way, and the second issue will be out, I think the same week, if I'm not mistaken.
Now, is this Kelly Sue DeConnick writing?
No, I don't think so.
She was writing she's writing the Captain Marvel.
She's writing the Captain Marvel, and that's going to get another reboot, like a new number one as part of Marvel's Now initiative or okay. whatever. But yeah, this Ms. Marvel book is just, it's just great. She's got, and they don't really explain her powers too much other than it's like some kind of shape-shifting.
Right.
But like the cover was great. The interior art was great. The dialogue was great. You know, it's a character you instantly care about. It's just really, really well done.
Yeah, she's an individual and her world is realistic and it's just a different enough character so that you're like, okay, I want to see how they play this. And I'm glad to hear that the sales have justified their decision.
Yeah, the sales are definitely overwhelmingly, I think even Marvel was just like, wow, it sold better than one of their best sellers. You know, and number ones typically do better, but this just really, really did really great. And, you know, kudos to Marvel for letting a book like this
because that could get be kind of push. That could be pretty, you know, that could cause some controversy, given the current state of our society.
Yeah, I think you know it's definitely risky, even from just from a sales standpoint. Like, can a teenage minority character, a female teenage minority character, carry a monthly book and turn a profit? And you know, like I said, it's sold out everywhere. So it's a great, great book. If you can get your hands on it, I definitely recommend it too.
Yeah, well, speaking of awesome things, you got something pretty awesome, Steve.
This week has been, it's been weird. My sister would say I'm on the struggle bus, which I guess is true. Somebody hit my car, so I've got these, like, huge scrapes in my car. My check engine light came on.
Oh.
I found out I hit the hardest out of everyone we went out, like, Friday night, and we're punching one of those, like, punching machines. And I hit the hardest with my right hand, and I'm left-handed, which prompted alcoholic Steven to go try and crack a tile in a bathroom with my hand, and I think I broke my pinky because I make good decisions. So it's been a shit week for me, in addition to some other stuff. But something awesome did happen. Stu, I think, got a phone call at the shop, and it was a guy, and he's like, hey, I want to send something to John Clark. I don't have his address, obviously, because, you know, John's a fucking private citizen. He's like, can I send it to the store? I found the store's number online. It's for the Caffeinated Comics guys. And Stu's like,
well, you also say the address every single show.
Yeah. And this guy's kind of just getting, like, I guess the okay to send this. And I didn't know. I wasn't there that day. And Stu's like, yeah, sure, because whatever. So we get a package, and it's certified mail. So this, you know, went to some trouble to email this. But it came with a letter. And it says, to John Clark and, you know, Caffeinated Comics or whatever, and it says, greetings. I've been listening to Chicago area podcasts for only a few months now, but yours is clearly one of the most professional, energetic, and listenable. That's a great cover image, too, with the cape and the coffee stain. Kudos to the artist, which is very kind words.
That's Steven and Dave Gonzalez.
Dave Gonzalez did a little together, digitally.
He did the layout.
Digital magic.
But Steven did the original drawing, if you didn't know.
And it says, I'll confess, I've never been as drawn to superhero comics as you guys. I spent a fair amount of my childhood amassing Spider-Man paraphernalia, including some excellent suction cup web shooters, and I would generally read anything with Spidey in it, including Superman vs. Spider-Man, Secret Wars, and that X-Men run where Peter was crucified and killed by Kulin the Gath when he temporarily rewrote the universe or something.
This proves he's a real fan.
He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
The bulk of his collection is always less mainstream, though, and the modest superhero section consisted of such titles as Nexus, Martial Law, The Badger, The Question, and Armor, the old continuity comics one, not Marvel.
And he's got good taste.
I was going to say, it's the next thing.
If he's reading
Nexus, he's got great taste.
And the Denny O'Neill Question is such an underrated book.
Yep. Truth be told, my love of comics began with Carl Barks' Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck stories when I was really little, and as I grew into my teens in the 80s, I was reading Judge Dredd and all his 2000 AD friends. The Black and White Conan magazines.
That hits where I live, too.
There you go. Black and White Conan magazines, House of Mystery, and Plop. When I was in my 20s and in the 90s, I got into the Dark Horse Alien stories, Hellblazer, Akira's great, Hellboy's great, Sandman. Batches, Concrete, Cerebus, Bone, Alien Legion, Gru, Scud, and anything by Alan Moore and Frank Miller.
A lot of nods.
I like this guy.
Yeah, right? These days, I'm way too busy to maintain much of a reading list. I still grab BPRD when I can, and Saga is really good. Am I the only one to suspect some Scud influence there? I certainly can't imagine, can't manage individual issues anymore. It's all trade paperbacks for me now, which is, you know, exactly what I've been doing. In any case, I really enjoy Caffeinated Comics, even if I do get a bit lost when you guys are hip deep in Avengers lore, which is my bad. I did note about a month back that you were in need of a second computer to do on-the-fly research while recording. While I'm working very hard to establish a gaming convention in Chicago this summer, I work in the IT field to pay the bills, and I'm regularly up to my eyeballs in extra hardware, so I thought I would send you this laptop. It's about 5 years old, but would function perfectly well as a surfing machine, and the battery should last long enough to move from room to room. I hope you find it useful, and viva la podcast. Sincerely, Thomas Glenn, President, ValorCon, LLC. He gives his email, thomas.glenn@valorcon.com. And then P.S., I also run a listing of Chicago area geek and friendly business and events at chigeeks.com. If you like, take a look at your description on the podcast page and let me know if you'd like to change it in any way. And it sounded like really good letterhead. This guy like typed it up and signed this, and he mailed us a fucking laptop.
That's what we have another laptop now.
It restores my faith in humanity because it was not looking so great this week.
Plus, I want to go bookmark his page to see, you know, what he's got in that listing.
I'd be interested definitely in, I don't know how, obviously none of us know Thomas Glenn.
Yeah, well, so we want to thank you now, Thomas.
Oh, definitely.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for taking the extra effort. We're all really blown away. Our first reaction when we read that was like, well, we need to read this on the show.
I didn't know if this was real life or not.
Well, you thought the box was anthrax. Initially.
I have a horrible, I trust nobody.
Well, and while this happened, I was in a meeting and I was presenting in the meeting and I'm on a conference call and this text pops up and I'm like, well, box, I didn't order anything. I was like, if I order anything from the shop, you order it from Diamond, it comes to the
shop. I thought maybe you had ordered something and had it shipped to the store because like, you don't want like Renee to see it or something. And I'm like, all right, what figure or whatever. I thought like I was going to open this box and it was gonna be like, action
hot toys in there,
or something
yeah.
you weren't allowed to order because you're married and have kids.
A woman.
And it was, but it was this guy, and this is really sweet. And, you know, he's setting up this like gaming convention I'd like to know more about. I'm certain, we've got a lot of customers.
Yeah, so Thomas, board. Directly, if once the gaming convention goes on, once you got ValorCon up and running, definitely send us a line. Our Facebook page is a great way to do it. If you're not already on our Facebook page, just put a status update and let us know how the gaming convention is. We would absolutely love to promote it on the air and let people know when it's happening and give it the greatest chance of success. And to be honest, we haven't done a lot of gaming, so it'll give us an excuse to talk more about gaming, which we haven't
absolutely.
Done. But thank you so much. And for the other listeners, if you also have pieces of electronics or Bowen statues would be nice.
Or old Simon games.
Old Kirby comics would be fun. televisions, that would be great.
Superman number one.
Yeah, coffee. So you could, anybody that wants to send us anything. This is actually our first real piece of fan mail. We've had a lot of fun talking to people on the Facebook page and on the Twitter feed, which is @NotInMyBook on Twitter. But definitely feel free to reach out to us. But this was great. You know, this is the kind of thing we don't get from looking at the hit counts, from looking at iTunes, from looking at how many people have clicked like on the Facebook page this week. This is a level of fandom and a level of connection that no number can justify, and so we really thank you, and thank you to everybody who's listening to this. This is the most fun part of our week, and sometimes we forget that anybody's listening to it. You know, we'll put out an episode and nobody clicks like or nobody leaves a comment, and it's like, oh, I'm not gonna. I do get comments that somebody said, oh, I'm five behind and I'm listening to them all today.
Yeah, they build up.
Yeah, sometimes you get a comment on something we did a month ago, but rest assured, we're doing it every week. In fact, I'd like to announce that next week will be a very special episode because Steven and I are taking the show on the road with our mini iPad.
Yes.
We're going to try out the GarageBand app, and we are going to the Rincon Surfing Festival in Puerto Rico.
Neither one of us know how to surf.
We are not going to surf.
I was
going to
try.
You can try.
I'll try.
I'm not going to try. I'll be playing some shows with the King's Heartbeat. that weekend with Walker from previously of Walker and the Brotherhood of the Grape down there. If you're down in Puerto Rico, come out and see us. They're playing three shows. There is a Facebook page for the event. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to more rum.
Yeah.
I think we should have some real Puerto Rican rum.
Yep.
And I don't know if there'll be a topic next week. We may just talk about what we're doing down there.
Yeah.
But I'm really, really excited about that. And hopefully we'll post it as soon as we get on the plane back home. If there's any technical difficulties, we might run an old one. We've got some other episodes in the bank. But hopefully next week will be coverage direct from Puerto Rico. And I know we've done all the plugs. Actually, Joe, your Twitter?
I'm at Twitter at ZenMasterGuy. That's all run together as one word.
Great. And Steven, I know you have an announcement for the store before we say goodbye.
Yeah, the store, 19 South DeGrange Road, Camaras Comics. This week, February 27th at 7 p.m., we're doing a Win a Brick event for HeroClix. There's some rules and stuff. It's $15 to play. We need a minimum of 12 people to run the event. But basically, the idea is you pay the $15 to get into the tournament. It's a constructed team for HeroClix. And the winner will actually walk away with a brick, which it's 10 boosters. It's sealed in plastic.
Okay, so not an actual brick.
We're not handing out bricks. I'll give you a brick if you want one. But
I throw bricks on the basketball court.
There you go.
Well, that's the thing. I can have that brick, and then I can just do whatever I want to it. And none of it would be good.
No, not
I wouldn't build with it.
This is a a brick because it's basically 10 boosters, which each booster has 5 HeroClix figures, and it's sealed in plastic.
So basically like a case is what you're saying.
Well, a case would be 2 bricks.
Oh, okay.
There's a term for that, which is, you know, it's complicated. But basically,
it's a half case.
You're half getting a half case or a brick of HeroClix, and the idea
like a pony cake.
It's either got a chase exactly. figure or one of the primes, which are just super rare figures. You know, and it normally retails for like $120, $130, somewhere around there. So basically, you pay $15 and you have a chance to win this in a tournament style play.
And when is it again?
It's February 27th at 7 p.m. So it's this coming Thursday. Okay. All the information's on our Facebook. But yeah, if anyone's out there listening, it's in HeroClix, you know, come out and, I don't know, $15 is a pretty sweet deal to get a brick. I'm gonna try.
Well, yeah, great.
Well, it's Superman and the Legion of Superheroes. It's their new HeroClix set comes out this Wednesday.
Oh, so it's a brick of the very latest set.
The very new set, yeah.
So if you play HeroClix, you don't have this unless you pre-ordered it and picking it up Wednesday. So it's as current as you can get.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. We've done all the plugs. Hope we will see you next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.